Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sal Licata Show podcast, episode 19, in fact. It's been fun moving right along here as we continue on this path. And, you know, you can download, rate, subscribe, wherever you get your podcast, and we appreciate any likes and comments and all those different things. Let's get right into it as we normally do here. The Knicks last night, frustrating game. Now, you can't go nuts in the regular season in the NBA. I don't care that it's a team. I mean, the Knicks were, you know, double-digit favorites last night. I think 15-point favorites last night at home to the Pacers, and they lose again to a hated team. I mean, I can't stand the Pacers. I hated the Bulls back in the day, hated the Heat back in the day. Maybe the difference in hating the Pacers is because they were kind of on par. I know that the Knicks got the better of them back then for the most part, but still just equal footing. I mean, I guess the Heat were too. The Bulls were always at that next level, but there's just something about the Pacers that I hated them even more. And obviously in recent years, I hate them even more than I did back then with Halliburton, the way that it's gone the last 2 years with the Pacers ousting the Knicks. And then they come in with the worst record in the Eastern Conference and still find a way to beat the Knicks. There were some individual things about the game that bothered me that I'll get to in a second here, but overall, okay, a loss, not good. At home to a crappy team, not good, but does it really matter in the big scheme of things, in the grand scheme? Does it matter? No OG Anunoby. He's their second best player. And I know they beat Boston without Anunoby over the weekend, but still, they need Anunoby. They need to get fully healthy, go make a run in the postseason. That's when it matters with this team. It's a good thing that the Knicks have built themselves up to a point where I can't go nuts after one loss in the regular season. However, there are things about the game that annoy you. Specifically, Karl-Anthony Towns. I don't know how many times I got to say it. The offensive fouls, the guy is an offensive foul machine. And not even saying him getting fouled out in the overtime, which is annoying on itself, but even before that, dude, he's got to have, A, he's got to be smarter than that. B, he's got to have better body control. He is a big, sloppy mess who cannot help himself. It is a pattern. It's happened. It's probably happened in his days in Minnesota. I don't know. I wasn't paying enough attention to it. You know, players from afar, specifically in the NBA, you're watching the highlights of them. And when you see the highlights, they're knocking down threes, they're dunking the ball, they're doing well in the paint, whatever it may be. And with Towns, I remember more so on the perimeter, a big that can knock down the three like that, looking smooth and doing so, it's appealing. You see the stats, you see the numbers, you see the all-star appearances, and that's what makes you want a player. And then when you get him in here on a daily basis, you see, ah, okay, now this guy's got some issues. And for me, it's something that's been consistent in watching him since he has become a Knick. He cannot control himself with the offensive fouls. It's a freaking problem, a major problem that's not going away. But there are two options. One, sit here and critique and say they're never going to win a championship, which I've done. But I mean, what good is that? We're going to come on after every Knick game and every Knick loss and every bad Towns performance and say the same thing. Even when he has a good performance for me, it's still always, yeah, but I've seen too much damage to trust him in a big spot. He may have a clean game, so to speak, lighting it up, scoring a bunch of points, knocking down some threes, a little mix inside, outside, whatever. But ultimately, I'd be worried about the next game and saying, yeah, but he might find himself in foul trouble again early on in the game or take himself out or get fouled out or stupid fouls in a big spot. He has shown that that's who he is as a player. Unfortunately, that's what Karl-Anthony Towns is. So you have to live with the good, live with the bad, and just hope, and that's kind of what we're doing as Knicks fans, hope that it doesn't come back to bite you in the biggest spots in the postseason. But losing to the Pacers at home, it can't happen. I mean, that's on the coach, that's on the players, even without Anunoby, you got to figure out a way to beat the Pacers. Pacers played harder in the game, and the Pacers didn't play perfect. I mean, they were sloppy too with the turnovers, the amount of turnovers that they had. The Knicks took advantage of that. You know, the Pacers themselves clearly aren't healthy without Halliburton, but been better as of late than what their record says overall. And they're not the worst team in the East. I mean, their record says that, but especially when they're playing the Knicks, they turn it up a little bit and play hard. That's what you saw last night. So it's unfortunate. It can't happen. Inexcusable for one of the best teams in the league to have that type of loss at home when you're 15-point favorites, but they did. And Towns, to me, a main issue, not just for the game last night. You know, nobody's defending. It's everybody. That loss is on everybody. Coach, players, all the above. But when Towns does again what he's done so often, it just drives me nuts. And big picture, that is an issue. The other thing that bothered me last night, and this is way less relevant, but it's just it annoys the crap out of me. Dude, McConnell. That guy is such a freaking pest. And the Knicks can't stop him. He gets going. He gets on those three buckets in a row, attacking the rim, penetrating. God, it's infuriating. One of the primary reasons I hate the Pacers. Not just McConnell, not just Halliburton, but McConnell as well. And you think maybe the Knicks got their version of that with Alvarado. And we'll see how it plays out in the postseason. You know, and Alvarado's a nice player, but I think there's been a bit of an inflation here on what Alvarado was going to mean to the Knicks. He's not the final piece to a championship puzzle. He's a nice piece, a piece that I think can help them with some toughness, defensively, attitude, maybe the things that they lost when they moved DiVincenzo to Towns. We talked about this. Maybe those things can, you know, Alvarado can make up for that. But I think there's an inflation of what Alvarado is because of where he comes from. And BT and I used to fight about this all the time. Or not really fight about it, but discuss it all the time. He can't get enough of the guys that play here that are from here. Can't get enough of it. I couldn't care less about it. I don't think it's a bad thing. And I do think it's a cool story. Like when they pan to the crowd and show Alvarado's family there, you know, whoever it is with the jersey on, his parents are there. Great. But I don't care where he's from. What I care about Alvarado is the fire that he plays the game with. Whether he's from New York or Atlanta or Mississippi, I mean, I really don't give a crap. I care about the fire that he plays with, the passion and energy that he plays with, the attitude that he plays with. I care if he can't hit shots. Like, those are things that matter to me, not where he's from. Is it a nice story? Sure. Does it matter? No, it does not matter ultimately. And I think because he's from New York, there's this inflation on what he is as a player and what he could do for the team. So, I mean, there's a lot there from last night's game. Ultimately, while there are frustrating things about it, while it is inexcusable, big picture doesn't mean anything, you know, other than just a regular season loss, which doesn't matter for the Knicks. The seeding is going to be what it is. They're going to be a playoff team, and then we're going to evaluate them from there. So you could say that basically after every game, but you are looking for things in these games to see reasons to believe in them come postseason. Nothing about last night was extraordinary. The Towns thing happens all the time. So that's just another reminder of, yeah, this guy in a tight game against a team that's going to, you know, be tough like that with the Pacers, even though they're not a great team, with the offensive fouls with Towns, it just drives you nuts. But that's just another reminder of the negative stuff. You know, a matchup on that we're going to see on Wednesday night against Detroit, you know, against Philadelphia, where the Knicks got pasted by Detroit, and that's the measuring stick, and Detroit will be the first game that the Knicks play when they come back from the All-Star break here. But a matchup against Philadelphia tonight, a team who, to me, is more dangerous than the Pacers come postseason, certainly this year. You know, Indiana's not going to make it, you wouldn't think, this year, unless they go on some kind of a run. They're going to be on the outside looking in with the worst record in the Eastern Conference right now. Sixers, a real threat in the Eastern Conference, somebody who I thought could be a threat earlier on in the season, so maybe more of a measuring stick game tonight. Second game, back-to-back, final game before the All-Star break, needing to respond off of the loss last night. We'll see what the Knicks could do in Philadelphia tonight and maybe get back on track. And after that game, actually, we'll go live here. Why not go live, Bada Booms, tonight? We'll go watch the game, go live, react to it, and recap. Not the first half, because the Knicks have played a bunch. It is way more than halfway home. They played 54 games already. So it's way more than halfway home, but just going into the All-Star break, it'll be over a week since we see the Knicks after the game Wednesday night in Philly, before they return home and then take on Detroit. So frustrating night, especially that they had a chance to come back and win it. I mean, Towns gets fouled at the end, hits the two clutch free throws, and then they end up losing it in overtime anyway. So frustrating night, not a big deal, not going to go nuts. All right, you have anything about the booms there? You know, one thing I did want to ask you before we move on to the baseball, I want to get to that in a second. The homegrown stuff that I was talking about with Alvarado, do you get more into that or not homegrown, but players who are from the area that play for their team? BT loved it. I don't give a crap about it. Where do you stand on that, Bada Booms?
I do get like really into that. Like that's one of the big reasons why I'm still holding out hope for Anthony Volpe. And think about, at least to my perspective, one of the biggest stars in the history of my pitiful football team, it always comes back to them, Wayne Corbett. One of the big reasons why he's so beloved is because where he's from. He practiced.
But he was really good, though, too.
He was good.
So that's my point. Like, if a player's good, why does it matter where he's from?
But Wayne Corbett had a certain ceiling. You know what I mean? He was never Randy Moss.
I understand that. I think Wayne Corbett, that's my point. I don't care where he was from or where he went to college. If he went to USC versus Hofstra, but still overachieved and maximized every ounce of ability that he had, I think you'd love him just as much. I don't think it matters where he comes from. You know, I love Mike Piazza. I didn't love him because he was Italian or because of wherever he came from. I couldn't care less where he came from. I loved him because he was great with the Mets. Same thing with Juan Soto. It doesn't matter to me where he comes from. It matters that, you know, or is he from New York? Who gives a crap? I care that he's good. You know, you care where Aaron Judge is born? You care that he's not from New York? No, you love Aaron Judge because he's great.
No, but it makes you love a player more. Like, I really have no reason to have any emotional connection to Mike Piazza, but I do because he's Italian. I felt like I had to go back and watch his, and I played catcher too. That's probably another reason why, but I feel like I have a connection to Mike Piazza, and I'm not even a Met fan. So for some players, it does. It builds a bond with some people. And, you know, Juan Soto's Dominican, right?
Yeah.
So for, you know, people who be very interested in the World Baseball Classic, they have a connection to Juan Soto. Maybe they grew up in the same city as his family.
I think I do. Right. I think a lot of people get into that. I understand what you're saying. Me personally, I just never gave a crap. I never cared where Ewing was from or Starks was from. I love those guys because the way they played for the team that I was rooting for, not because, oh, well, he's a local kid. Like, yes. Is it a decent story? Is it a nice story? Sure. I don't think ultimately that it matters. You mentioned Juan Soto. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I think a lot of people vicariously live through players too, the same way I do. Like, here's a good example. Well, maybe it's not a good example, but to feed into your point there, I vicariously live through Garrett Wilson. Just the way he puts his heart on his sleeve for the team, the way they live and die with him. I feel like he's kind of the heart, whatever there is, of the New York Jets. He is that. And even when he was here, like Melo, he was a local guy, so I think maybe if Melo didn't go to Cuse, wasn't from New York. Remember the video when Melo first came to New York?
Oh, come on, I'm coming home. Yeah, he's not from here. He's born in Baltimore. And I don't care where he was from. That's my point.
Was he really from Baltimore?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
My whole life has been a lie.
Maybe.
I thought he was from New York.
Google it. Carmelo Anthony was born in Baltimore. He might have been
raised in New York. But he doesn't have the Baltimore accent, though.
Is there a Baltimore accent?
Yeah, are you not familiar with the Baltimore accent?
I'm not familiar with it.
On the Toogie? Scootin' your Jagalaman?
I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Carmelo Anthony is from Baltimore. Doesn't he have the West Baltimore tattoo on his arm?
You've never heard the Baltimore accent before?
No, I've never heard of that.
That's shocking to me, Sal. They have their own language in Baltimore. I can Google it right now if you want me to.
Well, that's why I asked you to. Yes, Google it real quick.
Well, that was a great PR thing with Melo because they totally got me. I was convinced he was from, like,
Oh, I remember the Bronx. At the time, a lot of us were like, what do you mean coming home? He's not even from here. Again, maybe raised here.
Ruined my childhood here.
And Melo was overrated to begin with. Anyway, all right, you could look that up. We'll get back to you here. So you mentioned Juan Soto. Let's get into that. We did a little bit of it yesterday with the breaking news that Soto was going to be moved to left field. This is a good thing for the Mets. I've seen people, first of all, it's not a big deal. Moving big league players, moving positions is not a big deal. It happens all the time, and it's a position that he's familiar with and better at. He played a full season there in 2023. If Judge wasn't playing center with the Yankees and they wanted him to be in right field and keep him healthy, Soto could have played left. The problem is Yankee Stadium left field, a little more challenging than right field, so they figured they could mask Soto's deficiencies and put him in right. With the Mets, it's not that way. Citi Field, right field could be tricky. Left field could be tricky. It's equally as tricky. Not as bad as Yankee Stadium left field. As spacious as Yankee Stadium left field. That's why the Yankees primarily wanted Juan Soto in right. My point is, he played full-time left field with the Padres. He could do it. He did it with the Nationals. He played a full season there with San Diego just in 2023. So this is not, oh, Soto could only play right field. He wasn't great at right. He's not going to be great at left. He'll be more than adequate in left field. The Mets are going to be better with Juan Soto defensively in left field. The pieces to the puzzle fit better. It's not a big deal at all. As a matter of fact, it's a great thing that the Mets could go to Soto and he could say, whatever you guys need. And that's what happened. Mendoza started talking to him about it because he's going to be playing left field in the World Baseball Classic for Team DR. And he was open to it after Mendoza mentioned it. And Mendoza's like, okay, well, that's great that you do whatever the team wants, but like, seriously, do you want to play left? Seriously? And he said, yeah, they had the conversation. The Mets feel it makes the roster better with Soto in left. You pencil him in. Roberts in center, Soto's in left. Now figure out right field. It's still going to be the same issues with the Mets. Is Carson Benj going to be able to take the reins and win that job out of spring training? Who the hell knows? They're counting on him. And good. I like the way that they opened it up for a young guy. You've got to give a young guy the possibility to, you know, win that position and develop and grow. They're banking on it. They could be wrong. And if they're wrong, it's going to be a hit to the team because they don't have anybody in right field. The one area, you know, it would be Tyrone Taylor they'd have as a backup potentially. MJ Melendez. I mean, those are not real everyday players. Those guys are maybe decent backups. Tyrone Taylor is a decent backup. MJ Melendez, who the hell knows if he's a minor leaguer or not, you know, if he can cut it in the big leagues. So, but those guys aren't viable options to play every day. Beatty would have been an option potentially to get a lot of work in left field, I thought. I don't know about right field. I don't think Beatty, it's just different in right field for a guy who's an infielder by trade anyway. But that is a bigger issue than moving one outfielder to another outfield position or moving Bo Bichette from shortstop or second base to third base. Those aren't big deals. Beatty, who's a guy who's not a natural outfielder, playing him in left a little bit and getting him acclimated out there, that's shaky. But then having to now get him acclimated in right, that's even more shaky. So that's something that I wouldn't do. And maybe the Mets feel like they could go out there and find a right fielder easier than they could a left fielder if they needed to, if Carson Benj can't get the job done. But I love the idea of moving Soto to left field. He's familiar there. He's okay doing it. Lock him in at left, and let's move the hell on already with worrying about Juan Soto. It is not a negative thing. It's a good thing that the Mets can identify how to make their ball club better and not worry about the ego of Juan Soto. He doesn't want to hit in this spot in the lineup. He doesn't want to move to this position and play this position, so we're kind of stuck with him in right. The Mets feel they're better with him in left. They talk to him about it. He's okay with it. Good on them. Good on him. The other note, we haven't talked about this yet. We did it yesterday on SNY, but I haven't talked about it yet on the podcast with Francisco Lindor. Anytime you hear surgery and a player that is as irreplaceable as Lindor, it's a little nerve-wracking. You can't help yourself but think, oh, man, here we go. But come on. I mean, we've experienced, from a Met fan perspective, how many times have you experienced things like Verlander on opening day? That you wake up and you hear that news. Oh, he's going to be shut down for a few weeks or whatever it is. He can't pitch. Like, that's a gut punch. Or the pitcher is going down in spring training. Like, it happens almost once a year, it seems, at least once a year. Those, to me, are more significant or more reason to be upset or negative about the team going in. This doesn't seem to be that big of a deal because Stern said himself yesterday with the hamate issue with Lindor, first of all, they're getting it checked out. So what I'm saying right now could even be old news by the time you're listening to this. They're going to get it reevaluated or seen by a specialist on Wednesday. If they determine that he needs surgery, they could have the surgery and he'd still be ready in 6 weeks. That's the expected recovery time, which should have him roughly ready to go on opening day. And you know Lindor's a gamer. This is something he's been playing through on and off for the last couple of years. Not that big of a deal at all. And by the way, even if he missed the first few weeks of the season, even if he missed the first month of the season, it's outside of the excitement of wanting to see the full team and certainly one of the top stars in the lineup and, you know, together with Bichette and Soto, outside of that, it's not a big deal. You can have a bad April, a bad May, as Lindor has had consistently since he's been here, and still have a good season. You could have a bad April and May as a team and still have a good season. The Mets proved that in 2024. Other teams have proved that. Sadly, baseball's regular season does not mean as much as it used to as it pertains to the wins and losses on a daily basis. It just doesn't. You know, at the end of the year, they all add up, sure, but the way that the sport is now, you can kind of find your way, and teams do it, all of them, in April, May, June. I mean, even the Dodgers. It wasn't like the Dodgers ran roughshod over the National League throughout the course of the season last year. They got hot at the end and then obviously go on the run in the postseason. Now, they were built to be the best team, so you expected that. And with the Mets, you know, they got to make the postseason. You win 83 games or whatever it was a year ago and fall short, and it's just not good enough. So every game does count. Yeah, we understand that, but you can kind of feel your way through the first couple of months of the season. So not a big deal to me, even if he does miss time, but I would not expect Francisco Lindor to miss time at all because they seem optimistic, even in the worst case scenario that he has to have the surgery. The hamate bone, they were saying yesterday, like, you don't even need the hamate bone. I'm not sure what it is, but, and it hurts him. I'm sure he's feeling discomfort there fielding, although I would guess with the bat in his hand, that would be the concern. Just get rid of the thing. Take it out. Take the hamate, have surgery, get it out, and move forward. If you don't need it, then what the hell is the difference? Can't feel any pain that way, but I wouldn't be concerned about Lindor. So some interesting news, you know, get your attention with both moving Soto's position if you're the Mets, and then, you know, Francisco Lindor, potential surgery, but ultimately if he's going to be back by opening day or around there, I don't think it's a big deal at all. The other piece of news that came down yesterday that pertains to the Yankees, although it came from a former Yankee and a current Red Sox, was IKF, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, talking about how the Blue Jays, he was a Blue Jay last year, Red Sox now, obviously was a Yankee before that, talking about how the Blue Jays wanted the Yankees to beat the Red Sox in the postseason because they thought it was a better matchup, which I found interesting, and also think that the teams in the AL East are getting a little too loud for my liking when they're talking about the Yankees. And IKF running his mouth about when he was with the Blue Jays, wanting them to face the Yankees because they thought it was a better matchup. We know what Toronto did to the Yankees in Toronto in the regular season, winning the division in the regular season, and then destroying them in the postseason. It was a mismatch. Going in, I thought the Yankees were the better team. Going in to the postseason series I'm talking about. Well, I mean, regular season too, but specifically postseason. I thought the Yankees in the regular season were the better team, fell short. But going into the postseason, I thought the Yankees were going to make up for what happened in the regular season and pay back the Blue Jays. Short series, I believe the Yankees were the better team, just a more powerful team, better pitching, and they were going to win that series. And obviously they didn't. But I wouldn't wake up the sleeping giant. And you've heard a lot of chatter from the Red Sox. You've heard a lot of chatter from the Blue Jays. And I know the Yankees are going to take that personally. It's just a matter of if they're going to be able to put it together and go out there and do it. Do they have the right guys? Certain guys, I know the manager's passionate about it. I know Aaron Judge is going to be passionate about it and take those things personally. When other teams punk you, we saw the Dodgers do that in the 2024 World Series, punk the Yankees on the field and then do it again afterward. The Yankees didn't have a chance to get some revenge on the Dodgers last year, falling short of getting the World Series after losing to the Blue Jays. But the Yankees are a very dangerous team. We could criticize them for not doing enough in the offseason, for not going over the top in the offseason, but even running it back, they're good, very good. And I could say that I don't think they're good enough to win the World Series, but I could also say that I think they're better than the Red Sox, and I think they're better than the Blue Jays. Even in a quote-unquote down year with the Yankees getting handled by Toronto for the most part in the regular season, they won 94 games. Toronto hung on to that division. I mean, they were hanging on for dear life down the stretch. So they were fortunate that they had the tiebreaker over the Yankees. I wouldn't count on that being the case again. And the Yankees pitching, assuming it could get healthy and stay healthy, as dominant as there is in the sport. The Yankees offense, certainly in the regular season, as dominant as there is in the sport. I remember Buck Martinez, who just retired, talking about how he didn't believe the Yankees were any good and all those different things. And I understand what he was saying, and I agree with some of what he was saying to a certain extent about the Yankees not playing the game the right way. Too many empty at-bats with the strikeouts, not catching the ball well enough, not running the bases well enough. Still, the Yankees are as dangerous as it gets in the American League. And if I'm IKF, or if I'm on the Red Sox, and you've seen this, Sonny Gray running his mouth, now IKF, we know how Cora feels, we know the battle with the Yankees and Red Sox. I think it's great for entertainment purposes, great for the fans to be able to get into it. I love that aspect of it, but I'd be careful if I'm Toronto or the Red Sox. It's not like you're punking some team that won 83 games and is going the wrong way. The Yankees still are loaded. I wish they did more. I think they could have been even more loaded. Could have been better. No reason why they couldn't go after Bichette or Edwin Diaz, just to name a few. But be careful when you start running your mouth from a Red Sox or Blue Jay perspective when you start knocking the Yankees. Bada Boom, do you have any issue with IKF and some of the trash talk that has been going on between the AL East opponents of the New York Yankees?
I don't mean to run you over on this one, Sal, but IKF, buddy, get a better lead next time. You're playing in the World Series. You got to make that play, pal. You live your whole life to be safe at home in the world game seven of the World Series. Don't worry about the Yankees. Don't worry about the Yankees right now. That I didn't even know that sound. That pissed me off. Like, he actually just worked me. It, I got so mad where I just pulled
you
up on my phone.
You didn't know that news? What are you doing?
No,
you didn't see that?
I sent you a list of things to talk about today. That IKF was, that's how little I think about Isaiah Kinefalefa.
You got to get on top of things here. What's the matter with you?
I was on top of things. I sent you a whole show sheet, and I don't think we're going to touch any of those topics.
All right, no, but it's not a bad idea. I mean, you could have a show sheet, but I'm going to, you know, I clearly got to teach you the topics. You didn't even know about the IKF stuff. What are you working during the day? What, do you got another job or something?
Yeah, God knows how much this one pays me. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Yeah, you know I love you, but no, in all seriousness, Isaiah Kinefalefa, bro, go home. Like, that's so ridiculous.
He said,
thrown out at home plate.
Did you look it up?
Game seven of the World Series.
Did you look it up? And did you Google the Melo thing?
Carmelo Anthony was born in Brooklyn, New York, by the way, so.
He's from Baltimore. Then maybe I got it wrong. He's not. He was born in Brooklyn, but raised in Baltimore. So it was the opposite.
Born in Brooklyn, New York.
Does it say raised in Baltimore?
No, born in Brooklyn, New York. There you go.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. So then I got it confused. He was born technically in Brooklyn. He grew up in Baltimore. That's even worse. If he was born in Baltimore but grew up in New York, I can understand that a little bit. Who cares where he's born?
Born in Brooklyn, New York, so.
Dude, raised in Baltimore. Look it up.
Born in Brooklyn, New York.
It doesn't matter. Look where he was raised.
But I'm just telling you the tie there. He was born in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay,
but
I want to get the other facts. Does it say it? Where'd you look it up? Give me where he was raised.
I just looked up on Wikipedia, and I saw that Carmelo Anthony was born in Brooklyn, New York.
Wikipedia. I'm not even 100% sure here about Wikipedia. Do you trust that?
No, but that's what they used to tell you in school. And, like, does anybody who cares? Like, they used to say that all the time.
What, about where they're from?
No, don't trust Wikipedia and all that. Like, I don't. For the most part, Wikipedia is right. Every now and then, they'll go in there and they'll say, it'll be like, who is Pedro Martinez's daddy? And it'll say Yankees are his daddy. So, like, that's the only time they really mess around on Wikipedia.
He went to, it says high school, Towson Catholic in Towson, Maryland, Oak Hill Academy in Virginia. Anyway, I don't know Wikipedia. The point is, he's not even from New York. He may have been born here. He's not even from New York.
He's born in Brooklyn, Sal. I'm telling you. I'm not. It's not an opinion.
I don't care.
He was born in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay. He grew up in Baltimore. Dude, look at. He's got the WB tattoo on his arm. And you got to make me look this up? I mean, come on.
No, I believe you, but I'm just telling you that's why people have a connection to Melo. He was born in Brooklyn. A lot of people who root for the Knicks were born in Brooklyn.
Yeah. And when did he move out?
I don't know.
Here we go. Let's see. When Anthony turned 8, his family moved to Baltimore.
Yeah, so he lived there for 7 years.
8 years old! He grew up in Baltimore.
And
he was
I think
the Baltimore Suns Metro Player of the Year in 2001.
I think you're reaching there, OG. I think you're reaching.
I'm not reaching. If you look up the WB tattoo, I'm pretty sure that's what that is on Melo.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about now that I see it. I know that. I'm familiar with that tat.
I don't think you are.
No,
anyway.
I am, because you said it. You kept saying WB, and I'm like, WB as in like the Warner
I think
Brothers
West
studio.
Baltimore.
Yeah. But that makes sense now.
So anyway, and then IKF's comments were that he said the Blue Jays as a team. I'm telling you this now. I just told the listeners this. Now I got to tell you this because you're not paying attention.
The Blue Jays
as a team wanted the Yankees. That doesn't bother you? They wanted the Yankees, and then they destroyed the Yankees.
But why are you talking on us right now when you got thrown out at home plate in a game deciding the World Series? Like, don't worry about us, bro. Don't worry about us.
Carmelo Anthony has a notable WB tattoo on his left shoulder, which stands for West Baltimore, serving as an homage to his childhood home. Does he have a Brooklyn tattoo on there?
Born in Brooklyn, New York, Sal.
And raised in Baltimore. I had it backwards. Big deal.
Something is coming to me about this. Like, another thing besides the fact that he got thrown out at home plate in Game 7 of the World Series. I hope your boy Boone is printing this out and putting it on in the clubhouse. Do you have any insight like that from Boone? Does he do that kind of stuff?
I'll ask him.
We got to figure that out because, like, that should be
print something up and put it on the put it in the clubhouse.
Put it in the clubhouse. Put it in Tampa Bay, because that was one of their guys too. I feel like a lot of them probably may still be friends with.
I think the Yankees are gonna. The Yankees will know. They know about what the Dodgers said. They know about what the Red Sox have been chirping, whether it's Sonny Gray, whether it's IKF. They know about the Blue Jays. The problem is the Blue Jays chirped last year. Buck Martinez, that's why I thought the Yankees and Boone were going to pay him back in the playoffs, and they got their asses kicked instead. So you could know the chirping. You got to do something about it, and they haven't done that yet. But I wouldn't bet against the Yankees. Matter of fact, the more that these other knuckleheads start to chirp, the more I'm going to double down and say, I think the Yankees are going to get payback on them at some point. I'm not messing with the New York Yankees.
They've had a real bad problem with being bitched out by other teams and not rising to the occasion. And even when the Astros were still relevant towards the Yankee rivalry there, they get bitched out and they don't stand up to them. They just, the Yankees aren't good enough. Oh, the Yankees are so they. Oh, okay. You guys can win. You guys can have the series.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that was the attitude. Like, you guys could have the series, but they do need to start punching back here a little bit.
But when they get clowned, when they get exactly punked is the best way to put it. When they get punked, they don't. How hard you can get hit? They get hit in the mouth and they don't respond.
But that's why I do have a problem with a little bit of the makeup of the team. There are certain guys who I trust to respond. There are others who I don't. I don't think Jazz Chisholm gives a shit, honestly, about that. I think he cares about his numbers. I think he's happy-go-lucky. I think he's an athletic, talented player. I don't think he really cares. Does Trent Grisham care about that? I mean, do we know that, you know, Bellinger or McMahon really get fired up about that? I know Judge does. I know Boone does. Ben Rice seems like a fiery competitor. You know, Volpe, he's got to figure himself out before he can start worrying about punching back with other teams. You know, I don't know,
Stan,
man,
definitely hears it. Sadly, he doesn't play enough, but
yeah. Well, okay. All right. Where are those gamers? The guys that you scrappy type guys that are going to grind it out and punch you in the face. The what the hell is his name? The Alvarado types. You know, like you see with the
Yankees.
Knicks,
don't have an Alvarado. Maybe okay. They have some on the mound. They have Garrett Cole. They have Cam Schlittler. I think Cole's Louis Gill might even be one of those guys, but they don't have any in the field, which you're right about. I mean, I'm not going to discount Aaron Judge, obviously. Judge is one of them.
Yeah, he's the one, but he can't do it by himself.
They really don't. You make a great point.
They had Soto.
I think McMahon is like that in the field, too.
Okay.
But when it's time for him to hit, like McMahon, as we've seen, will put his body on the line to make the play, but he hits 179.
Yeah. Maybe Bellinger. Maybe am I missing somebody here?
Bellinger's actually not an awful one there.
I'm just trying to think of some of the fiery competitors that they have. Anyway, the Yankees, it's time the Yankees punch back. All right, let's wrap it up with this, Bada Booms.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been watching Landman. Are you familiar with Landman? It's a great show for many different reasons.
Yeah, and you mentioned Landman previously.
Yeah, so I'm binging it right now. But here's either the question, not really an issue, I guess. The question that I have, or maybe it's not a question, maybe it's more of an issue. I love binging shows. I love having the shows to go out there and watch. Then the part of me is like, okay, well, I only got 4 more episodes to go. I look forward to also finishing binging the shows. But then when they do finish, now I don't have anything to watch. And the shows that are coming out like once a week, like I'm into this new show on HBO. Do you watch, have you watched Game of Thrones and... you don't watch any of those?
I tried with Game of Thrones. I got 3 episodes in. I'm like, this is so boring.
I loved it. Okay, so love Game of Thrones. And then there was one, I forget what it's called, House of Dragons. And now there's another version of it. But it comes out once a week. And I binged like the first 4 episodes because that's when I started watching it. And now it's like, okay, well, I got to wait till Sunday. The Pit, I've told you about that. I binged season 1. Great. Started watching season 2, which is coming out now 1 episode at a time. And it's like, the slow drip is not working for me. So I guess I'm never happy. I don't like the slow drip. I think it takes away from the enjoyment of the show. But when you're binging, it's great, but it's great in just such a short period of time. And I'm excited to get through it and then finish it. So I have an issue here. With the way we watch TV shows, I think the binging has made it a little bit of a problem. That it kind of like you talked about yesterday with the gambling in sports, how it skews the way that we watch games, which it does. You can't dispute it. It's not good or bad. It's just different. With binging, the way that we have now access to TV shows, it completely changed the way that I feel about watching said shows.
I agree with you. I think that's exactly what I was going to say right there. a lot of it gets lost when you binge. Like, you watch all 8 episodes and then it's gone. And it's like, yo, what was that show that I watched with this person? Then the second season will come out. They hype it up. Then it's gone again. I feel like they're trying to bring back that appointment television like Sopranos used to be. Like, I assume Breaking Bad was at one point. But I do agree. It makes shows more forgettable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It makes them more enjoyable to binge. Pitt season 1, I loved. And I think I loved it because it was one after another, right into another. And that's how that show in particular plays out. It's better binge. So now with the slow drip, I'm not enjoying it as much. I like it. But then from week to week, I'm like, oh, what happened last week? Or, oh, I forget this. I don't know. Just the way that we consume television now. Can I even call? Is it called TV? I guess it is, right? If I'm streaming, it's still.
Yeah, technically, it's
still. Maybe show. I feel like the way that we consume shows is it just completely screws with me. It messes with me to a point where I don't know. I enjoy certain things, and then there are things like if I can't get into it right away, I'm like locked in. Nowadays, with the amount of product that's out there, if it doesn't get your attention right out of the gate, like I tried watching this other show. What the hell was it called? Some mob show with Tom Hardy, I think it is. It's also on Paramount, if I'm not mistaken. It may, in fact, be called Mobland. Have you heard of that one?
That Stallone's in that, right?
No, he's in Tulsa King.
Oh, Tulsa King, yeah. Have you ever seen the show with William DeMeo?
Yeah. Are you joking?
No. No, it's a huge thing.
You are joking. You're being a dick. You're joking.
I'm not. No, why would I be joking about that? You know the big Italian show with Shaq and William DeMeo?
Gravesend.
Gravesend, yeah. Why is that funny? Why does it...
You know I'm in that.
Are you actually?
Come on, Bada Booms.
Are you actually in it?
Yeah, I'm going to be in season 3. I filmed two seasons.
My bad, I wasn't a diehard fan of BT and Sal. Like, no, Evan Roberts is on it. 2:00. Of course I'm going to tune into him.
Yeah, I don't know when it comes out, but yes, I'm going to be in.
How many episodes were you in?
I don't know. It might be one episode, but I filmed multiple scenes. I filmed two different. Yeah.
That's crazy.
You really didn't know that?
No, I didn't.
I don't believe you. I think you're playing it up here.
No, I swear to God, I didn't know that.
Yeah, look forward to Gravesend season 3. I'll let you know.
What do you die in the background or something? What are you on in the
morgue? No, I'm a DJ. I play DJ Tom Paul.
Wow, Moby.
Yeah.
It all comes back around. Moby
in that. Mobland is with Tom Hardy. Like, I started watching that, couldn't get into it at all. First episode, and I know he's a great actor. And there's some other Pierce Brosnan is in there. Couldn't get into it. Whereas Gravesend, I did start. I know. Gravesend, I did start watching that because I talked with William DeMeo. He got me onto that, and we were talking about potentially having a role. I got into it. I liked season 1 and season 2. And then
do you know
about
William DeMeo
later,
outside of the show?
I've seen his stuff before that, but I was put in touch with him about that specifically. You know, BT and I had him in studio, too, for an interview.
He's a Brooklyn guy. Dude, I wish I knew that. I would have watched it.
Yeah, it was actually he was really good. Better than I thought he would be. Brooklyn guy, by the way, we talk about pizza. You got to ask him for all the spots because he's hitting all the spots. Will DeMeo, yeah, I'm honored to call him a friend of mine. Hung out with him a couple of times, like I said. Did the shoot with him. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I have a connection there, so I want to, you know, maybe we get Bill on one day and tell him about, because
what's your connection?
I know a lot of people that worked on the set there for Gravesend.
Who? Maybe I worked with them.
No, like behind the scenes.
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe I worked with them. We can talk about this off the air. Nobody cares about that. All right, Knicks. We'll do live tonight after the Knicks-Sixers game. Wrap up the Knicks. I was going to say first half, but because it's not really half. You know, they played, what, 70 games? What are they, 60 games? How many games have the Knicks played, Bada Booms? Can you look that up?
I think it's 54.
But 54, okay. Yeah, 70 games. I didn't play 70. What am I, an idiot?
70? Yeah, they played left?
No, they played 54, right. I think you're right. They're 34-20, something like that. 54 games. That's why I was doing the math of adding those two together plus the 20 losses that they have. Anyway, we'll be live tonight after the Knicks game and wrap up the first 55 games or so as they head in the All-Star break. So we'll have some fun doing that. Make sure you download, rate, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate it. We'll see you again for episode 20 on a Thursday. We got a little six with Sal as well. That's becoming a thing. Bada Boom's getting his clock clean so far on the first two. We'll see what six with Sal 3 has in store tomorrow. We'll see you then. Bye.